Hello, how are you? I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. And I happen to be in the Manhattan studio at Progressive Radio Network, and we are video streaming, not just audio streaming today. So if you want to say hi visually, hi, I'm here. And you know, you can call in with comments and questions anytime during this program today, any other time. The number is 1-888-874-4888. And fantastic. We have a great show today. I'm really looking forward to it. On the way here, walking to the studio, I was so excited because I discovered that there is a new location of Beyond Sushi, and it's right on 37th Street in Manhattan, very close to the theater district. There's never really been, for a long time, a good place to get vegan food if you're going to a Broadway show. Although there are plenty of restaurants in the area, but not completely vegan. And now we have two, and Beyond Sushi is one of them. And if you have a chance, check them out. They're phenomenal. The other one, which maybe I'll talk about later today, is PS Kitchen. I happened to be there a few days ago, and quite excited about that restaurant, too. But let's bring on my guest. We have Helen Rosenthal. And she is the council member for District 6 here in New York City. Helen's office helps thousands of residents stay in their homes, providing monthly housing clinics with free legal service. Through her legislation, Helen has almost doubled the income requirement to qualify for rent stabilization for both seniors and people with disabilities. Helen heard from hundreds of parents, teachers, residents about school rezoning and supported the parents who voted to approve new zone lines to alleviate overcrowding and concentrated poverty. She has empowered workers, giving them a fair share of their work through her Worker Cooperatives Initiative. Helen continues to make our streets safer, our schools stronger, and our parks greener. At City Hall, she introduced legislation to recognize Meatless Monday in New York and encourages residents to eat more plant-based meals once a week. Helen has also fought for animal rights and humane treatment through her tenure. She was a proud co-sponsor of legislation which recently passed, which we talked about on this program, to ban the use of wild and exotic animals in public performances. And you can learn more about Helen at helen2017.com. Helen, welcome to It's All About Food.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on your show.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time. I can imagine being a part of the NYC Council that you are very busy.
A little bit. But this is important.
Thank you.
What we put in our bodies, how we keep ourselves healthy, is critical. So I love talking about this.
Well, it's my favorite subject, food. Now, I had the opportunity to meet you maybe a month ago or so, and there was a nice gathering in Manhattan, and we spoke briefly, but it was exciting for a lot of us because you made an announcement about your particular eating habits, and I just wanted to talk about that a little bit, why you made those decisions and how you came to it.
Well, so over the past, I think this was in the making for over the past 6 months. And truly, you know, over my lifetime, I mean, I've been a, you know, quasi-vegetarian. But in December, I really started being aware of how food affected my body and how I felt. And learned more about a plant-based diet. I also came to realize that I have some major allergies, which make it a little easier for me to be vegan. I'm really allergic to milk and also nightshade vegetables. So unfortunately, potatoes, tomatoes, and peppers are out for me, and mushrooms, which I love. But no wonder my face was so blotchy my whole life. Anyway, so I've cut out everything and am really eating and enjoying a plant-based diet. It wasn't hard to do because it has made me feel so much better. I don't have stomach aches anymore. My face isn't erupting. And, you know, there are so many things going on in the world that we cannot control. And what we put in our mouth is something we can. And I have found it, I mean, as you were just talking about new restaurants in the city, I have found it not to be difficult to eat a vegan diet. You know, I go out to eat today where I was at a restaurant that's not vegan, but more and more, and certainly at this place, you know, there's the V is showing up on the different items so you can rest assured what you're putting in your mouth. And I love having that control. I am a big eater. I really like food. And this has been the greatest thing.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear about that. I just want to add an aside. There are a gazillion different kinds of plant foods. So the world is vast. There's a lot of variety. Mm-hmm. And if you can't eat something, that's okay. There's just so many other things out there. But as the inflammation from eating the wrong foods gets resolved and you heal, you may be able to eat some of those foods that caused you a problem. Just something to think about in the future.
I don't know. I have to say, well, I have to go see a doctor for sure, but little bumps that had been appearing on my body that are natural with aging are actually dissipating and going away.
Because they're not natural with aging.
Right. Right. Thank you. In the house I grew up in, it was natural with aging, but not for me, I guess,
right,
anymore.
Great. Well, this is great news. I want to know, I don't know that how many people are familiar with New York City and our government here, but can you tell me what the council does, and starting with how much you get to spend in the New York City budget?
The New York City budget is around $85 billion. It's the fourth largest budget of any municipality, including states, in the United States. And the responsibility of a council member is threefold. One, to hold oversight hearings about how the mayor is choosing to spend that $85 billion and push back or make changes. At the end of the day, it's the council that passes the budget. We also have responsibility for land use, where anyone wants to build something that's out of what they're allowed to do. It's the city council that votes on whether or not they can do that. And third, to connect people to city services. So as you mentioned at the beginning, I have a storefront office in my district where we see thousands of people, and our job is to connect them to city services. Sometimes when that's not happening enough, we will bring city services to the district. So over the last few weeks, we've brought the Department of Finance into my office and offered people the opportunity to come, you know, just right around the corner. They don't have to go downtown to sign up to freeze their rent, for example, if they're seniors and they're in rent-regulated homes. In terms of how much money each council member gets, it's a drop in the bucket in the context of the budget, but it can lead to meaningful support in somebody's district. So roughly every year, the city sets aside $5 million, at least that's what it's done during my tenure, $5 million in capital expenditures. And I've been able to use that money to invest in our local schools and parks and senior centers. You know, if a principal says to me that they need a new science lab or library or, you know, computers, I can actually allocate funds that way. And then similarly on the expense side, we're given funding to support whatever we want, but I support arts education in schools primarily, and also arts funding for arts programs in senior centers and in our public housing. One thing that this city council, about 20 members of the 51-member body, one thing that we do is turn over at least a million of that $5 million to the residents who live in the district, and they are the ones who both suggest the ideas of what should be funded and then do the final vote. And whatever the final tally comes up with, that funding goes in as the residents of this district have chosen. The process is called participatory budgeting. It's a mouthful. But basically in the fall, we let people know if they want to volunteer to work on this project, come up with ideas, shape them into real projects that the city would fund. And over the last 3 years, we go from about 80 ideas, just, you know, things people are brainstorming about, down to about 12 or 15 that actually get on the ballot. And then over the years, we've upped our numbers. Our first year, roughly 2,000 people voted. And this past year, it was 3,000. In our district, anyone who is 14 years or older can vote.
Wow.
It has nothing to do with electoral politics, so you don't have to be registered. But it would be helpful if you came with your Con Edison bill or your driver's license or school ID. And then, you know, people vote. And this year we voted online, too. It was very exciting.
Yes, very exciting. And people need to realize that they do have a say and they can be heard. You just have to get
involved. Absolutely. Now, by the same token, you know, I want to hear from everyone. But there are maybe times when I come to a different conclusion than somebody else comes to. But I make it a point to always hear everyone out. That's very important.
Okay, so my focus is food. And
okay.
I believe that food can solve a lot of problems and cause a lot of problems. And we've seen in a variety of different places, for example, in schools, when a school decides to kind of get old-fashioned and have their lunchroom serve freshly made meals, not meals that are just add water and from a packet and stir it up, but freshly made meals. The behavior of the students improves. The performance of the student improves. Excellent nutrition can only do good things. And I also believe that the costs go down because it's believed that serving fresh, healthy food is expensive and it doesn't have to be. I mean, beans are the cheapest things that we can eat and they're so good for us. So what's going on with the council in terms of food and food policy that we can get involved and excited about?
You know, I think one of the most important things is addressing hunger, you know, the issues of poverty. So the city council has pushed very hard to make sure that anyone can have lunch or breakfast at school. So we've done away with charging people. Anyone can get a free lunch. That's critical. I don't think we've gone far enough, though, in terms of serving healthy food. There are nonprofit groups that come into some schools if the principal will let them and bring healthier eating habits to the school and healthier eating choices, but it's not the Department of Education's policy yet to do that. I have a school in my district where one of the leaders in wellness in the school sent his child there, and their lunchroom is not set up for a full kitchen or even a kitchen at all. So they have not been able to have, healthy foods. And we have to push harder to fix that problem. I think the schools have to, can't be stopped by something like that. There have to be workarounds or other solutions. So, you know, whenever a principal says to me they want to do it but they can't, you know, we have to work harder to find solutions. I'm still looking for a nonprofit in the area that would lend their kitchen to this school and, you know, just transfer the freshly cooked food over from the nonprofit to the school. But, you know, bad food habits are entrenched in our country because so much of, unfortunately, so many states count on dairy and, you know, corn and soy as agricultural products to sustain the state. I mean, that's really where we need to address the problem, is to move those states into other industries that can serve the larger population and be just as desired. But, you know, the way the federal government works is they subsidize the farmers who are, you know, giving the rest of the country food we shouldn't be eating in the first place. You know, I'm not a big fan of American cheese. never was, likely never will be. And, you know, that is fundamentally the root of the problem, right? Because schools are, you know, if you want free food from the federal government, this is the junk you get.
Yeah. Let's talk about Meatless Mondays. So you are for Meatless Mondays, and what is it going to take to get that to be something that's supported by New York City?
So Fernando Cabrera, who's a council member from the Bronx and the other vegan in the city council, and I have decided that in the next council, should we both be reelected, we're going to start a vegan caucus.
Ooh.
And with the determination of this new caucus, we're going to get it through. You know, I think that as a whole, council members don't respect the importance of resolutions as compared to changing a law. So people don't invest as much time. And if you look, or as much energy into resolutions, and if you look on the city council website and you pull up the number of resolutions passed versus the number of laws we've passed, certainly laws by far outweigh the number of resolutions. A resolution means that we can't control, we can't pass a law dictating this, but it is something that we would like people to do, whether it be the state, the federal government, or people in their eating choices. I think that if we could get this resolution through, so many other groups, including, you know, yourself on radio or restaurateurs who want to support this, can use the fact that the city has passed this resolution as a, you know, as a call for people eating meatless at least once a week. You know, I come from a public health background, so the second, you know, someone had suggested this to me, it resonated immediately, and I'm very proud to be the person carrying this resolution. We just have to get it passed. We have to get our colleagues to take it seriously, which I have every intention of doing in the next council.
Excellent. Well, resolutions are not binding, but they start the conversation. And
that's right.
They put the idea out there, and it's a great opportunity for some free marketing in terms of press releases and different media outlets taking advantage to announce it, and then people can get curious and learn more about it. So.
Exactly.
I support
exactly
resolutions.
Would you?
Yes.
Would you have me on when we pass it?
Oh,
I'd love to.
Yes, how exciting.
We'll have our victory conversation.
Yeah, and then we'll go over to Beyond Sushi or somewhere and celebrate with some healthy food.
Absolutely. Although I have to say, I'd invite you to my district, so we might go to Candle Cafe West or Blossom.
Okay, no problem.
But I hear you.
Yes.
I hear you.
Well, the studio's here on 37th, which is right down the street from Beyond Sushi, but everyone that listens knows how big a fan I am of Candle, all the candles, and Blossom.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that we have them in this city. And I'll have to confess, I've eaten vegan all over the world for almost 30 years now. And New York's the best place for vegan restaurants.
Good to know.
Yep. I mean, there are some fun places, definitely, but there's no place like New York. Okay, I'm biased.
So much choice.
But there are.
And also, I mean, I think, you know, in a way that's not surprising, people come to New York to, you know, follow their dreams and their passions. So whether it be a vegan restaurant or Broadway, you're coming to New York.
Yes, and you know,
so
I want to say, if you can make it there, you'll make it anywhere. And vegan restaurants are making it here, so we can make it everywhere.
That's great. I love that attitude. That's wonderful.
So I want to thank you for supporting that intro 1233 for the ban of the wild and exotic animals in public performances. I know it took 11 years to get that through.
11 years and a terrifying warning the day of the vote. But
I heard about that.
But we got it through. We got it through.
So it's complicated and it's difficult. I know a lot of people get frustrated with the mayor, for example, because he's promised things and said that he would push to get things done. But he's not the only one making choices. He's got your 51 members to deal with in the council.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I mean, let's talk about the horse ban.
Let's talk about it.
I'm with him 100% on this. And, you know, the reality is to get a law passed, you need enough people in the council who would support it. And we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. And people are opposed to it for all sorts of different reasons. You know, and let's face it, this, you know, took 11 years to get the wild animal ban through the council. When you want something that's very important and it's hard to get, it's hard to get. That's why it's hard. And, you know, but that doesn't stop you. You know, if it's important, you fight for it.
What a lot of people don't understand, and I got some comments with regard to this bill, Intro 1233, about the ban of wild and exotic animals, using them in performance here in New York City, that they were complaining that activists were wasting their time and not pushing the broader agenda of a plant-based diet, not exploiting animals, period. And they're quite frustrated. And, you know, in my heart, I would love that we didn't exploit anyone or anything on this planet.
But
looking at history and knowing what's going on day to day, meeting all the people that I do and the people that I love and know, we don't all agree. And it's hard to make a big step. And it's hard to make a little step. But it's easier to make a little step than to make a really big step.
It's definitely true. You want to keep setting the bar higher and higher and higher, and eventually you'll get to where you want to be. I mean, there's legislative ideas where I've come in and at first wanted something, you know, wanted to change a certain aspect of how government works. And if it's not going to hold up to a court challenge, or it's not going to, you know, get the support of my colleagues, then I can't get that passed. And I either have to work on the legislation itself, the idea, and get it to a place where it could pass, or I have to wait for the right moment in time to move it through. One needs, you know, for the stuff that's important and is a really big change, it often takes, you know, a variety of things coming together to a sweet spot where it gets through. You know, I don't know how far off the topic of food you want to get or the horses, but, you know, we had an opportunity to desegregate two schools on the Upper West Side. And there was all of a sudden this sweet spot moment of a brand new school opening and parent leaders who would vote to desegregate. You know, it's just that all of a sudden that moment, you know, happened. And I was so proud to stand up and support these parents who chose to want to go that way and chose to say, you know, the reason segregation exists is because people always say, you know, let's study it more, or wait till next year. There was no waiting. Mm-hmm. A brand new school was about to open. You're either going to set it up for integration success or not.
Fantastic.
And, you know, I was very proud to stand with them, but it's taken a long time to get here.
Yeah.
People have tried different things. They didn't work. This is a plan I think is going to work. And, you know, it's a shame that it would be opposed, you know, but sometimes you have to stand up and just do the right thing.
Yes. Well, thank you, Helen Rosenthal, for standing up and doing the right thing as often as you do. I really appreciate that. And I'm glad I got to meet you. And I'm excited to see what you'll be doing with the council. And when are you up for re-election?
There's a primary on September 12th. And so on the upper left side of Manhattan, it's all about the Democratic primary. I have two people challenging me in the primary who are running on the Democratic line. And I hope people will look at my record over the last 4 years and know that I am very serious about continuing to work for them, and to pass legislation that I'm still working on, including Meatless Mondays.
Okay, great. Helen, I wish you all the best. Thank you for joining me. It's all about food.
Thanks for having me on. Keep eating.
Keep eating. Thank you. Keep eating delicious
Bye-bye.
Plant food. Yes, thank you.
Exactly.
That was Helen Rosenthal, Bye-bye. The council member of District 6 here in NYC. Fantastic. Okay, let's go on to my next guest, who is waiting, and I'm very excited to bring him on. We have Ghanim Al-Suleiti, a vegan entrepreneur and the founder and driving force behind Qatar's first vegan cafe, Evergreen Organics, the co-founder in Cambodia of the first vegan cafe, Vibe, the founder of Botany, a vegan ethical skincare line, and founder of the Good Vibe Foundation, which aims to feed 10,000 school children healthy vegan food in Cambodia. Ghanim is passionate about raising awareness about conscious living by promoting a plant-based lifestyle and is invested in the holistic approach to diet and health. And his goal with Vibe is to inspire people from all over the world to live a healthier lifestyle. Welcome and thank you for joining me, Ghanim.
Hi, how are you? How is it going?
Good. And did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes.
Excellent.
I mean, yeah, you made it right.
Thank you. It's early for you, isn't it?
It's actually very late for us. It's 12 midnight.
Oh, not so bad. Where are you right now?
So I'm in Doha, actually, Qatar.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm back into Qatar. But a couple of weeks ago, I was in Cambodia, so...
Okay.
But yeah, back and forth all the time.
Yeah, so I found out about you because my friend was traveling around Asia and ended up in Cambodia at your vegan cafe there. And
that's amazing. That's amazing. I think the world is it's a very small place right now, and especially for our vegan society, we're really, you know, coming together. And I can see how, you know, we're growing so much, but at the same time, you know, we are like all are, you know, coming to one place to kind of, you know, help each other and support one another, which is awesome.
When I hear about people like yourself, things happening in places that are far away from where I live, doing the wonderful things that you are, it gives me a lot of hope. And we live in a very crazy world. I think it's been crazy for a very long time. It seems especially heightened crazy here in the United States these days with our federal government and our leader that I don't even want to mention his name. And it's giving us a lot of challenges and giving us a bad reputation. But so it's important for us to focus on our individual lives and what we can do and what we can control. And I'm always saying that food is something that really can make a difference on so many levels. So just tell me, how did you get started wanting to promote a plant-based lifestyle?
Well, it all started, I mean, 4 years ago. So I've been vegan for 4 years.
Congratulations.
And, I've lived in the U.S. for 4 years. I've graduated from, you know, university in Philly. So actually, I got my inspiration while being in Philly back in 2013. I was watching Good Morning America one day, and then Kimberly Snyder, a very famous author, came on the show, and she was promoting her book. And I remember, like, she was talking about that book, you know, like, no, how food actually changed her life and, you know, kind of how it changed her look, changed her kind of health. And from that point, I went to Barnes & Noble, which was like a couple of blocks away, and I got the book and started my journey from there. And I think I started experimenting on my body, and I felt better every time I started like to substitute like to a vegan alternative. I was like always feeling better and better. And then when I just started, you know, reading a lot and meeting a lot of people who live on this lifestyle and traveling across the globe, meeting people and seeing cultures that have been surviving on a vegan diet, mainly a plant-based diet, for years, and they're doing amazing, and they're, you know, people are living to reach 100 and 105 and you know, people are still healthy. And that just, you know, actually made me question a lot of the stuff that we have in our culture and a lot of the stuff that we have in our, you know, in our lifestyle that we just don't, we think that it's right for us. But then once you start questioning, it just becomes a reality, kind of like a quick, you know, reality check that it's not actually good for us.
Yeah.
And from that point, I became fully vegan, and I didn't want to kind of at that point to say it to anybody or to tell people that I was vegan. And I mean, especially being from Doha, from Qatar, where we are like, you know, I'm sure, I mean, everybody, you know, all the cultures around the world are meat, you know, oriented, but I think in our culture is a bit more, intense.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is the meat culture there where you are?
Exactly. I mean, the meat culture is like is quite intense, and I think you know, I found, I mean, there was a bit challenging in the beginning, but I think once I've believed to, like, in what I was doing and when I made sure that what I'm doing is right, because you know, you wake up every morning thinking that, oh my God, what am I doing the right thing or not? And I think, you know, for me, reading books and meeting people and talking about it a bit loudly, I think that's what makes me a bit believe more in what I'm doing. And I think that just gave me the confidence to move forward. And then one day I realized while I was in Paris, actually, how people are feeling amazing coming to these vegan places, and how it actually, it's not just cafes, it's actually the whole community that comes with the space that you're trying to create. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, we need, like, this is what, let's say, my country needs, or where I live, and I can't survive without that community. So I had to create something like that. And once that was done, I guess, then when I was traveling to Asia, because I was always around Asia, the idea came when I was in Cambodia, because there was nothing like vegan 100% in the city. And that idea came again, and then that's what I had kind of my vision to kind of also try to share and make access, like, vegan food accessible to a lot to to cities and countries that are that don't have it. I mean, I'm not okay. You know what I mean? My vision is to kind of give that at least one option in every city, at least one, but a good option, very good option. So I guess that's where it all started, and it just brought me to a place where I felt that this is my message and this is my goal, and kind of, you know, I've seen the faces of the people when they, you know, and I mean, people come to us and say, "Oh my God, you've saved our lives," and sometimes it gets to actually that far. Because I've been traveling a lot, and I've been to Nepal, I've been to like a lot of Asian countries where it was so difficult to find clean food and healthy, you know, plant-based food. Even though, you know, they have the access to farms and the agriculture is amazing. But I think, you know, with education, with lack of education, I think that's where, I guess, the gap where. And I think I don't know. I felt that that was the intention for me to be here on Earth. At least that's what I felt finally.
You are saving lives. You're saving non-human animal lives by not eating them and encouraging others to not eat them, as well as improving the health of humans who decide to eat more plants and less animals. So you have two vegan cafes. One's in Qatar, Evergreen, and the other one is Vibe in Cambodia. Can you talk about what's on the menus of these two? I imagine they're different.
Sure. So the one in Qatar is a bit more, I mean, Qatar is a bit difficult in terms of getting the produce and getting the freshest produce. I mean, yes, we live in a kind of a, you know, a desert, you know, country where to grow some of your vegetables are quite hard. I mean, you are limited with the options. So most of this stuff is imported. But I mean, currently we are, you know, I mean, recently we've seen so much huge impact in terms of the organic farms and the grow aspect of that, you know. And, you know, the menu is really international. The chef that we have at Evergreen is actually from New York. He used to work in Boston and New York for almost 20 years as a vegan chef. So he's amazing. So he created an international menu with, you know, with like vegan burgers and raw pizzas and raw ravioli and tacos and you know, cheesecake with no cheese, chocolate torte and, you know, chocolate Nutella, but it's not Nutella. You know what I mean? Like all of these amazing, but it's actually very healthy because we only use whole food, plant-based, you know, ingredients. We don't use any, you know, packaged food, no processed food, no white sugar, no white flour. Nothing from, you know, nothing from a can, and we're trying our best to kind of avoid soy, as you know, the GMO that comes with it. So there's a lot of, you know, we've put a lot of consciousness in it. That's with Doha's more, even though it's a cafe, but it's at the end of the day, when you actually come there and you experience the food, it's more of a restaurant kind of a kind of a standard. Vibe is a bit more kind of simple in terms of the food. Still, you get all of these amazing, you know, quesadilla, and you get, you know, like the, you know, bowls, which are like, you know, we in Vibe, we always try to focus on kind of abundance of fruits and vegetables. And that's why in every dish, it's kind of more of a of an abundance kind of feeling you get, because you get a lot of the, like a lot of the, you know, colors and ingredients in a bowl. And it's kind of more of a, as I said, a simple cafe, very, you can easily see the ingredients and you can easily like point out what is on the dish rather than being like, oh my God, I can't know what's actually in the dish. But at the same time, we have cold pressed juices, raw vegan desserts. And that's in both places.
I want to come and try it out. Sounds so good.
And, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner in both places. And I think, yeah, trying to kind of cover up all the things. We have whole food section where you can come and grab, you know, almond butter and cashew butter because we make it all in-house. You know, homemade pesto, sauerkraut, kimchi, kombucha, you know, all of these amazing things which are like we're trying to kind of have that one-stop experience for the customers, as you know, it's just like you want to find that one space where you can just go in and have your food, trust them, you know, get everything you want while you're traveling. And yeah, I guess that's I mean, it's a very, very interesting menu, and it's huge, actually, and people can look through it online before, I mean, coming to the restaurant, and I think it's really, it's very interesting. But definitely, you know, both places have its own environment. I mean, in Vibe, we have the farms that are, you know, a couple of miles away from the cafe, so we get it so fresh in the morning, like you get the freshest ingredients. In Doha, it's a bit more of a challenge in terms of getting, like, the freshest ingredients, even though we still try, like, get it, but I think it's just like it takes a bit more of a challenge to get it. Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm just curious. We have a caller, and I want to bring her on. Okay.
Sure.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey, Karen. How are you?
Hi, Robin.
Hi. Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. So Robin is here, and she's the one who let me know about you, Ghanim, and your
cafe
and Vibe.
Hi. Hey,
Ghanim. Robin.
How are you? Hi. Oh, I'm good.
Oh, my God. So, the world is a small, like, literally is a small place. Like.
So, Karen, I love the interview. It's great.
Thank you. I want to know what you ate while you were at the Vibe Cafe.
I had a couple juices. I remember one was passion fruit. I don't remember the other. And I had the bean burger, and I had, I bought those mini donuts to take back to my hotel, almonds and
Yum.
Chocolate and Dayton. I think I bought a couple of them. And the burger was interesting because it was bean and it had bread, and I probably had not had bread in almost a month. So I was so happy to have a piece of bread. And I don't eat that much bread, but it was just so comforting to be there, you know, from the time I walked in. Because Phnom Penh's not exactly an easy city. It's busy. It's hectic. It just was so intense. And eating, as you were talking about, in Southeast Asia, can be a bit of a challenge. And the night before, my group, we got to the hotel late, and we had an arranged dinner across the street, and I'm not going to rain on anyone's parade, but people in my group were eating fried scorpions and fried ants in their pasta. And if they want to, that's fine, but I was so desperate to eat at a place that I felt home was, you know, that the place was home, and that I walked into your beautiful restaurant, and I just took a deep breath, and I was so happy and so relieved.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to hear that, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you. And is Fania, is she listening, or
yes,
will she get to hear this?
Fania, you mean the manager?
Yeah.
I'm sure she. I don't know. I mean, they're sleeping now in Cambodia, so I'm not sure if she's up now.
She can listen later.
Right. She's amazing as well. Beautiful.
You can say hi to Pania. Yeah.
she said to me, "I love meeting vegans from all over the world."
Yes, I love meeting vegans from all over the world. Robin, how did you find out about Vibe?
I do a lot of research, as you know, and I probably did some Googling of just vegan Cambodia, vegan Phnom Penh. But then, of course, I went to happycow.net, you know. And
yep.
And Ghanim, I read the menus of a number of, you know, there were some other vegan restaurants listed. I read it, and then I reread it maybe a few hours later, and I said to my tour leader, "This is a good place. This is a good place," because I really wanted to understand where I was going, because at that point I was just so hungry. and I plan to email him so he knows for the future how great. Well, I told him it was great, but I'll continue. It was wonderful.
Well, that's something that all of us can do when we go on tours and we discover something, to let our tour guide know of places for vegans or anyone who's looking for healthy food where they can feel at home.
I felt at home, and it's so beautiful upstairs. And there's three levels, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. Karen, there's a garden room, and it's so tranquil. And the streets are so busy and so difficult, for me at least. And just walking in there was amazing and so clean. And I tried to go to the one in Siem Reap a few days later, but unfortunately I became ill and I just stayed at my hotel and I couldn't go anywhere. But I knew it was there and I felt so bad. But I'm so happy I had this experience in a country, in Cambodia.
Well, Robin, thank you for letting me know about Ghanim. I'm excited to be able to talk to him and learn about his projects. And thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye, Ghanim.
Bye-bye. It was
bye,
great
Karen.
Hearing you.
Bye. Oh, I love how small the world is sometimes.
It is. Really, actually. It's actually overwhelming to know how easy and simple you can easily connect nowadays, and it's kind of like so simple to keep in touch with people, and it's just fascinating. So
tell me, how do your family and friends respond to your work and your projects and your plant-based lifestyle?
I think from day one I made the decision by myself without sharing it to anybody, even my family. I think I kept it to myself for a few months. And then after a few months, I'm sure they've noticed, and everybody was telling me like, oh, you're avoiding meat and you're avoiding chicken and fish and all the dairy products. And I was like, yes. And that's when I had to kind of tell them. And they all thought I'm crazy at that point. And I would say like 4 years ago, vegan is not even a word to be used. Vegetarian wasn't even a word to use in Doha, let's say. So even telling them that I'm not eating meat or chicken, it's like it didn't make any sense. But I was always trying to convince them, always trying to kind of talk to them about it and explain and trying to get them through the same experience. But I never was successful to do that. So at some point I just like said, I'm just gonna, if I feel great, if I feel amazing, if I feel different, if I feel the purpose and I feel the reason what I'm doing it, so why should I even put the energy out on trying to kind of prove to people that what I was doing is right? So let me just do whatever I think is right and put the energy back in. And that's what I did. And I remember the first day when I opened Evergreen, even though my family knew that I was opening the restaurant, they didn't buy into the idea until the day of the opening. Mm-hmm. So once they came into the opening, what shook them is that it was full. Like seriously, from the first 5 minutes that we've opened, it was packed. Non-vegan mm-hmm. people, for sure. It wasn't like vegan people
curious.
Who came in. It was like just like the community.
Yeah.
But my dad was like, oh my God, like now I get it. Now I get it.
Good.
And I think at that moment I was like, I'm so proud. I was like, oh my God, finally. Like, but I don't know what happened at that time. Like, I don't know if it's the people. I don't know if it's just the culture. Like if people can see it, that it's actually happening and it's actually working. And that people actually, there's demand for it. I think that's when people clicked their mind. So I guess from that point, my family started accepting the whole idea. And now my mom is semi-vegan, I would say. She's vegan
Woo!
Until 5 p.m. in the afternoon. My dad, at least drinks green smoothie every morning with me and have, fruit platters. And he at least he have these, green juices that I do all the time. My brother is vegetarian, which he just turned like a couple of years ago.
Beautiful.
My friends, I've switched... All my friend group that I travel with are now vegetarian, vegan. They bought into it. And, I'm happy because I get to travel and I get to choose the restaurants that I want and everybody would come with me. And so, I don't have to kind of, go to restaurants that I don't want to go to.
Well, I want to congratulate and commend you for, number one, discovering what it is that you were put on the planet to do and mm-hmm. then having the courage to do it. Because a lot of people look for approval from their friends and family, mm-hmm. and when they don't mm-hmm. get it right away or ever, it makes it extra challenging. So, good for you.
True. Thank you so much. Thank you. I think it's quite a journey, and I think every day I'm still learning, and I yes, I'm vegan today, and I've been vegan for 4 years, and I have these vegan businesses. And I always tell people around me, they would say, oh, are you doing this forever? Are you doing this for, you know? And I always tell people that I'm today, like now I can talk about what I know today and what I know now at this moment. I don't want to talk about 10 years from today. Well, I don't know what's going to happen. Five years ago, I didn't know that I'm going to be vegan and I'm going to have, you know, three businesses across the globe. And you know, and I never thought that. So I think you never know what's going to happen. What's going to be the next thing? Could it be like a different diet? Could it be a different thing? I don't know. But I know that today vegan is the answer and vegan is the future that I think would be. And it makes me feel amazing. And I think that's the most important thing.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, I've been doing it for almost 30 years, and I think vegan is the answer.
Yes, that's amazing. I love to hear that.
Yes. Can we talk about the Good Vibe Foundation, where you're aiming to feed 10,000 school children? What is that about?
So the idea came in the beginning before we did Vibe. I always wanted to create a space where, what, like a restaurant or a cafe where you go in, and I wanted to change kind of how people you know, perceive cafes. You know, you always go to a cafe, you think you're just gonna eat and give the money to somebody and then leave, and you think the money goes into the, you know, to buy stocks and food and for the company to kind of get profits or whatever. And I wanted to kind of include the customers to a bit of a journey and a bit of an experience, and give them a bit of a different view on when you actually come to a restaurant and you're eating, you're not just making your body healthy, you're not saving the environment, you're not just saving the animals, but you're actually giving back to the community by every time you're eating. So we've connected and created this foundation so that every time you eat a Vibe, let's say, Vibe donate 10% of the profit of whatever you've eaten to the foundation. So every time you've actually eaten anything at Vibe, it automatically goes to the foundation. And then I've connected all my businesses that I have. So I have Botany, which is an ethical product brand, which is have candles and skincare line, and every time you buy a product, it goes directly also to, you know, to the foundation. So I wanted to kind of connect every single business that I have and other people's businesses. So whenever you go to that business, it automatically feeds somebody else out there healthy vegan food. Going back to the foundation, I think we all, you know, a lot of people think that vegan food is expensive and vegan food is only for the rich people. And a lot of people just link that to kind of, you know, you can't afford vegan food. And I hate to hear that because vegan food is so simple and so easy to you know, to kind of have your hands on. And I think I wanted to also show that, you know, even in rural communities and it's always the solution. It's always the, you know, because I always see charities and other, you know, other organization when they go to kind of give back to the community, they always give the cheapest kind of food, the cheapest kind of, you know, ingredients to the kids or to whoever it needs. And I think that's, you know, everybody deserves great food and healthy food, and no matter what. And I think healthy food is satisfying and filling and nutritious. And to start in Cambodia was because, you know, Cambodia have a big kind of number in terms of, you know, children that are, you know, they have lack of nutrition. They don't go to school because they get sick. And I guess it's just because we had this business in Cambodia and I wanted to kind of connect the communities in Cambodia with that and make sure that, you know, I always love the idea of giving back, and I think it's an important thing, you know, for the earth to keep doing, for the earth to keep giving us. I think we always have to give back, and I think it just makes it a great, experience for whoever. I just love the idea of if you're eating vegan, then you're also giving a chance for another kid out there to eat vegan. Not just, you know, and I want to kind of share that with a lot of people. And yeah, 10,000 children, this is our aim this year. And we're moving forward and we're moving, you know, kind of very ambitious. And we did some projects a couple of weeks ago when I was there, and it was amazing to meet the kids actually not to just to give them meals. And I, you know, we teach them, you know, we talk to them, we we teach them about vegetables and eating, you know, fresh food and trying to kind of raise the awareness in the community. And I think it's a small thing that we are doing at the moment, but I think it's going to get bigger and bigger eventually. And yeah, it makes all the businesses that I do make sense at the end of the day, and it makes that, and it gives that kind of I guess at the end of the day, that kind of peace of mind when you think of the options and the opportunities that other people don't have, and you're being part of it, and you're part of giving back to
I love
whoever.
It Ghanim, it's just such a great story. Mm-hmm. And I love hearing about mm-hmm. everything that you're doing. It just inspires me. I'm so glad to know you're out there, and I wish you all the success. And people that are traveling to these places, Qatar and Cambodia, should find out about these wonderful places to eat. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And I'm hope to see you one day in
yes.
real life, and maybe we can
and have a bite,
talk more, and have maybe at Evergreen one day.
Sounds good. I want to go. Okay, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Okay, that was Ghanim Al-Sulaiti. And you can find out more about him by going to responsibilityandliving.com and clicking on this interview. And there are a bunch of links there where you can find out about his projects. Yeah, so we just have a minute and a half left. And I just wanted to quickly mention some of the great food that I've had in the last few days, because I was so excited to discover them. And of course, if you visit my blog at responsibilityandliving.com, my What Vegans Eat daily blog, you can see and read about all of these foods. So we went to PS Kitchen a few days ago. It's a brand new restaurant. It is in the Broadway District at 48th Street. And it's founded by a couple of guys that have a chain called Terry in New York, Craig and Jeff. And we met them, and we met the chef, and we ate this wonderful food. It's a really beautiful restaurant, and the food is very creative and unique. You will not find any green salads or green smoothies. And it's funny, because I was just interviewing Ann Hodgman about her book last week, Vegan Food for the Rest of Us, and there are no salads and green smoothies in her book either. I don't know if this is a trend, but for those of you that just want some really good eating, this is a place for that. You can see their menu online at ps-kitchen.com. And yesterday, I was out with my niece and nephew. They are 10 and 12, and I had about 3 hours to take them around and entertain them. I had this whole itinerary planned, and of course, everything took a lot longer than I expected to. And of course, they were hungry when I wasn't planning on feeding them. And so we got to our one destination, and they wanted something to eat. And it's a little challenging, because one of them has celiac, and we have to be really careful about gluten. And we stumbled upon Pressed Juicery, and I know about them from California. I've been there a number of times. They have green juices, and they recently introduced a new product called Freeze, and it looks like soft serve ice cream. It tastes fabulous, and it's made from fruits like berries, almonds, and dates, and some of the flavors have some extra ingredients, but they're made from whole foods. There's no sugar, certainly no gluten, and they're delicious, and to give some children a treat like that when they haven't had breakfast, you can feel really good about it. It was really fun, and I was so excited to find it, Pressed Juicery. Another place that we stopped at was Friedman's. Oh, am I out of time? I'm out of time, so I'll have to talk about that next week. Or you can go to my blog, What Vegans Eat. In the meantime, have a very delicious week. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food.